Why do siblings raised in the same home turn out so differently? Why do immigrant children quickly adopt their peers' accents rather than their parents'? Judith Rich Harris's groundbreaking book, The Nurture Assumption, challenges our most fundamental beliefs about child development with a revolutionary thesis. Parents have far less influence on their children's development than we've been led to believe. When published in 1998, this idea was so provocative that Steven Pinker called it a turning point in the history of psychology, while others were outraged that a grandmother from New Jersey with no university affiliation would dare challenge decades of established thinking. Yet the evidence Harris presents is compelling and forces us to reconsider everything we thought we knew about how children develop. For over a century, we've believed children's personalities are primarily shaped by parenting. This assumption suggests loving parents produce secure children. Parents who talk raise bright children, and parents who set limits have well-behaved children. However, these correlations might actually result from shared genes, child-to-parent effects, where children's traits elicit certain parental responses, or neighborhood effects, where similar families cluster together. This nurture assumption began with Freud and continued through behaviorism, with John Watson famously claiming he could train any healthy infant to become any specialist regardless of innate talents. Despite early studies finding few connections between parenting and children's personalities, the belief persisted. Behavioral genetics provides compelling evidence against this assumption. By studying adoptees and twins, researchers can separate hereditary from environmental influences. Results consistently show heredity accounts for about 50% of variation in psychological traits. Growing up in the same home doesn't make siblings more alike in personality. Identical twins raised apart are as similar as those raised together, while adoptive siblings become no more similar than strangers by adulthood. Even significant differences in parenting have minimal effects. Children of working mothers are virtually indistinguishable from those with stay-at-home mothers. Quality of daycare has little or no impact on most children's development, and children in unconventional family arrangements show no significant differences in adjustment compared to those in conventional families. If parents can't modify their child's personality, why does everyone believe they have important effects? Because children develop context-specific behaviors. They act differently in different environments. Babies of depressed mothers appear withdrawn with them, but animated with nursery caregivers. Toddlers may be shy at home, yet social at daycare. Language acquisition demonstrates this clearly. Children of immigrants typically respond in English, even when addressed in their heritage language, developing stronger English skills through peer interaction. Parents don't even need to teach language. In many traditional societies, mothers rarely speak directly to pre-linguistic children, yet all eventually become competent speakers. Children of deaf parents with minimal verbal input become fluent English speakers through peer interactions. This explains why children from troubled homes can thrive elsewhere. A child might feel anxious at home, but confident at school, showing how responses are tied to specific contexts rather than becoming generalized personality traits. Harris proposes group socialization theory. Children are socialized primarily by their peer groups, not parents. Children identify with others their own age and gender, adapting their behavior to fit group norms. By age 3, children identify their gender and age category, forming the foundation for socialization. They quickly adopt the mannerisms and behaviors of their peer group, with groups operating by majority rules where newcomers must conform. Even nursery school children show sophisticated social awareness, secretly sharing forbidden toys and creating a sense of groupness against adults. Children's cultures include strategies for mocking authority, private languages, and games passed through generations without adult involvement. Immigrant families provide evidence of cultural transmission. When immigrant children join peer groups of non-ethnic Americans, the parents' culture fades quickly. Children become code switchers, but the outside culture invariably wins. Within 3 generations, the original culture typically disappears, especially away from ethnic enclaves. The deaf community demonstrates peer-based transmission perfectly. Since most deaf children are born to hearing parents, deaf culture cannot be passed down from parents, yet remains robust as deaf children acquire their language and culture from peers in schools for the deaf. Consider 16-year-old Larry Ayuso, failing school in the South Bronx with friends lost to drug violence. After relocating to New Mexico through a program moving kids from urban ghettos, he transformed into an AB student and basketball star. Research confirms this pattern. Children can be rescued by removing them from delinquent peers. British studies show delinquent London boys' crime rates decline when they move out of the city. Neighborhood composition matters more than family characteristics. African American youth from high-risk families in middle-class neighborhoods show aggression levels comparable to their middle-class peers. In schools, children develop subtle ways to defy authority while technically following rules, what sociologist Sharon Carer calls playing the fine line. These rebellions are performed for other students, who matter most to children's social experience. Peers enforce conformity through mechanisms from subtle social cues to overt mockery. The nail that sticks up gets hammered down. Research shows peer acceptance/rejection affects adult adjustment, while childhood relationships with parents don't leave permanent personality marks. Harris acknowledges parents aren't merely wallpaper in their children's lives. They influence what children learn at home, though this doesn't necessarily shape personality. Children adopt knowledge that aligns with peer values. Parents' greatest influence comes from determining their child's peer group. By choosing neighborhoods or schools, they can significantly alter their child's developmental path. Harris recommends environments with smart, hardworking peers where academic achievement is valued. She challenges conventional wisdom about self-esteem. Success creates high self-esteem, not the reverse. Genuine self-esteem stems from peer group status. While parents can't prevent negative typecasting, they can reduce its likelihood by ensuring children appear normal, dressing them like peers, addressing medical and dental issues, and avoiding unusual names. The nurture assumption has turned children into objects of anxiety, making parents fear that minor mistakes might permanently harm development, while introducing an element of phoniness into family life by blurring genuine love with expert-prescribed behaviors. Harris's message liberates parents. Children are not empty canvases on which parents can paint their dreams. She encourages parents to love their children because they're lovable, enjoy them, teach what they can, and relax. Children's outcomes aren't simply reflections of parental care. They belong to tomorrow. Science continues supporting Harris's theory. Studies show that when parents treat children differently, it's typically because the children are different first, due to genetic and peer influences. The strongest predictor of a child's behavior is how their classmates behave, not parenting techniques. Your children's future isn't solely in your hands, and that's not a failure, but recognition of human development's complexity. Love them, guide them toward positive peer groups, and remember their journey is ultimately their own.